Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm the director of Heartland Prairie Cemetery, a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. Today I have a conversation with Naomi Warab and Tina Zuccarello about the care they provided to Naomi's father, Jeff Warab, as he was dying and following his death. Jeff belonged to a community of people who formed an ashram in Arizona. Tina has been instrumental in opening a burial ground on the property and is well-versed in after-death care practices in the community. Wi-Fi was down in my area when we started this conversation, so we needed to hold it in two sessions over 2 days while our server got the problem fixed. In the first part, I'm talking mainly with Tina, who provided guidance to Naomi and her siblings throughout the time they were caring for their dad. The following day, Naomi and I picked up the conversation. I have known Naomi and her family since Naomi was a baby. It was so special for me to hear about her experience, now in her 20s, of what it was like to care for her dad in this way. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how you became involved in this area and became kind of the educator in your community about what was possible and the advocate for natural burials and home-based after-death care.
Well, so natural burials, we've just always been into because we have had land and dirt and place to dig a hole. So that's
fantastic.
Pretty easy to figure out. But the rest of it has just been from years ago on our old property in Prescott, too, when there was a woman who was dying there and in her care, and just seeing how easily we can actually take care of one another. And for me personally, I'm not much of a long haul, like you're going to be sick for 10 years and I'm going to look after you. But dying is a different story. You know, when someone's dying, they're in a different space and there's so much energy. I feel so fed, and others in the space feel so fed by what the person's going through and being able to be a part of it, that there's just so much energy to then take care of whatever their physical needs are and their emotional needs and being able to, you know, get for them what they need. So, and it's, at least where we are, I found it to be pretty straightforward, even though there's some hoops to jump through to get hospice care and have the different things so that you have professionals who know what they're doing for medication, for pain control, and all that sort of thing. But then the actual doing of it, like for Jeff, it was during COVID and everything was shut down. And wow. We learned that Jeff had decided, okay, I'm done with trying to fight this. And the doctors say, if I don't fight it, I've got about 3 weeks. So it was a pretty quick deal to just check with everyone. We'd been closed. Our ashram was like closed as far as groups of people coming. And it's like just checking in with everybody very briefly that, you know, Jeff's dying. Let's take care of him. Is everybody in? And immediately everybody's like, of course, yes, we're in. Even whether people could actually do any of the work needed or not, mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to see that happen. So
can you please describe the ashram? There are people who live there on site, correct?
Yeah,
and so even during COVID, you have a community of people that were living.
Yeah, 15 to 17 people living on site, either in a main dwelling or in separate homes. And so there's people. And it's a couple hundred acres. It's a pretty big property. So we're mm-hmm. not on top of each other. But we have a really big kind of a guest lodge place, which is where Jeff came, which worked out so beautifully because then all of his kids, his grandkids, there's COVID. So we weren't having other events. So it's like the house is the house for this beautiful family gathering where everyone could support each other. And Jeff in the same house, not like go to a hospital. It's like he's right here. Mm-hmm. He's in the house for the grandkids to be part of that. And then there's, you know, my favorite scenes were like, oh, there's a card game going on at the foot of Jeff's bed. And mm-hmm. he's just sort of dozing and looking over it. It's just life happening. And for the grandkids to be able to be part of that, it's so natural and so beautiful that they could get that. Not like, oh, death is this thing and you go away to do. No, here's right. Grandpa's dying.
And it's so right here.
He's here and he can communicate with us. And now right. through the different stages until he couldn't communicate finally at a point. But it was all very natural. And even after he died then, which is, you know, right there in the house. And there were one of the people involved particularly was like, oh, what do you do with a dead body in the house? It's just, then there's this dead body. It's like, oh, it's just a body. And we want to care for this body. And obviously Jeff's not in there anymore, which mm-hmm. even the grandkids are like, that's not grandpa, you know. He's not in there anymore. But oh, this is just totally natural. You can have a person can die in the house. It's just, what is wrong with that? Nothing. This is so beautiful. And then, okay, we're going to bathe the body. Oh, what? Oh, my God, this is wonderful. And like caring for the body that held this person who we adored with all our hearts. Oh, we can respect this human being, this body, this whole family could gather around. And we do a thing where we do the allowable 3 days of having a body rest in state. And we have the ice packs and we got all the things down, you know, and dress them up really nice. And they're there and people can come and sit who's still, you know, you're feeling like, yeah, he's not really in there anymore, but this is still this is what carried him. This is a piece of who he is. So you'd sit in there, you have people crying, and then people go, and then there's jokes, and then there's, I'm sure you know, have the same kind of experience where there's all of life happens and there finally comes a closure after 3 days, miraculously, each time we've had any of these things, 3 days, it's like, yeah, we're ready to move on and ready for him to be able to go to his resting place. And for us, we have a backhoe, we have a cemetery. We go and we dig a hole and, you know, Naomi got in the hole to check it out before her dad was going to be in this hole, you know, and we have a cemetery and we can go in procession with all of his friends and family and walk like from one place to another, walk into a place, have a ceremony. Like when we had, before COVID, we had one man passed away and we could actually have a ceremony inside. And all the people, it was beautiful. And it was summer, so we did it early morning before it was going to be too hot. But during COVID, okay, we're going to have it outside. So those who gathered, we gathered around in masks all around up on the hillside. And people spoke and his sons put his body in the ground. And there he is right there on our ashram. And I take my dogs for walks and go out there and like get to see this is where he is and see little things added here and there as family and friends come by and put, here's a little rock. Oh, that's a new little rock. Someone's been by here to visit. It was just part of life. And that would not be dying separately somewhere and then being buried somewhere, who knows where, that's not part of our life. And yeah.
Yeah.
Like that.
Like that. You present it in that way that it's just the obvious thing that we do. You know, we come together, we're caring for a person as they are dying, and it's the most natural progression of things to continue caring for the body, the piece that is the most familiar to us.
Yeah. There was a woman in our Sangha who passed away, and it happened even though she'd been ill for some time. Her death was quite sudden. It seemed like she was going to be getting better, but then didn't. And they brought her home from the hospital so that she could die at home. This was in town. And she died at home. And those of us who'd been more involved with like working these things out were not there. So she died at home and the husband called and the mortuary came and got her body in the morning. Mm. And then it was like a whole ordeal to get her body back. And so there was no time. There was this whole piece was missing. in that, which was very hard for her adult children and her husband. And then we finally got it worked out that we could transport her body, bring it, because we have a legal cemetery, we could bring her body out. Mm-hmm. And then this beautiful thing that happened, because her children came, and particularly her daughter and her husband and I, her son was doing the legal taking care of things, because it was a bit too much for him to be around his mother's body at that point. But her body arrived with still all the tubes and the things. It's like, what in the heck? These things can just be removed. She doesn't, but nobody, they didn't know. So because we're not taught how, that we think we can't touch these things, but it's pretty easy to get the hang of, oh, you know what? Actually, yes, we can. Of course we can. This is my mom. I can remove these things. So with her daughter, we had a bonding hour of washing, bathing her body, and her husband sitting by and handing us the new clothes and doing the things. And it was like, oh yeah, okay. She could reconnect with her mom and her mom's body. And it wasn't like this, she died and the body is taken and now I can't have anything to do with it anymore. It's like, no, here she is. Let's remove these things. Oh, let's give her a bath and love. Oh, let's do her little hair. And how did she like? Oh, she liked her hair. Oh, yeah. And so to see her daughter then just kind of melt into, right, I can do this. Like you get a kind of an inner strength that comes like, oh, yeah, this is natural. Of course I can do this.
Right, right.
You know, it's.
It really helps to have someone along who is helping with ushering people in, helping them to understand that you can step a little closer and be a part of this tender care. Have you found that it's an impulse in people and kind of an instinct to want to take care, but they need a little bit of guidance on how to do this?
It, for some people and some others, I think it's been too deeply instilled that there is no way that I can, because that's not right.
Right.
And have to be really shown, no, you know what, actually all that you've been told, it's just not true. And then they can, everyone that I've worked with around that has been able to go, oh, well, yeah. Oh my God. Why isn't this taught in the schools? Like, why do we not know that this is part of what can happen? So, but it does take, for some people go into it easily and others are like, wait a minute, no, this can't be right. Mm-hmm.
So being mindful of your time, Tina, just wondering what it took to open a cemetery on the property there at the ashram.
So that was something that we always wanted. We knew that from the beginning. So our ashram property is actually a planned area development. It's called a PAD zoning with the county. So I had to go to the planning and zoning board and do all these things to make it so that it is a PAD and rather than zoned differently, so that we could have several dwellings all on one parcel instead of one dwelling per parcel, because it's a big parcel. So some of the people in this meeting were like, you shouldn't be able to just have a cemetery, you know, bodies just buried willy-nilly.
I know, there's so much fear around it.
One of the words, people have, whatever their idea is of, you know, somehow there's contamination. I don't know what they could possibly imagine, but luckily there were enough people, others on this board, and enough wisdom in the group of the 300 people there that others were not fighting it. And it was like, well, no, actually, legally, in the state of Arizona, you can, as long as you have blah, 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 and it's marked out. And we had a surveyor come out to survey, mm-hmm. and it has to be a certain number of feet from a parcel boundary. And we have a 1 acre designated part of our planned area development is this cemetery. And it was really cool that the surveyor, he's just got this, like, this feel about him, this man who's maybe in his 50s, and he's just got this feel about him going, I wonder what's going on for this man. And as we're talking, he's saying, this is the perfect thing for me to be doing right now.
Wow.
My 19-year-old son committed suicide a week ago.
Oh.
So the man was completely brokenhearted. That was what the mood was about him. And that he got to bring his work into making this place that, yes, that you can bury your people that you love on your own land. And like, it just did something for him that this is what he was so touched that this is what he was called to survey, which isn't his usual. You don't usually get called out to survey it. So then once we got it in there, it's just in there. Our cemetery is, here's the boundaries and there it is. And we'll have some people that will be saying, well, is there enough room for everybody when they die? There is so much room.
It's amazing, isn't it? Land. Yeah. How many people are buried out there now?
5 and ashes of 2.
Okay.
Ashes, there's even more room.
Yes, indeed. Now, are most of these shroud burials?
Oh, yes. We do wrapping. This cloth. We don't do gravestones. We just have rocks stacked and maybe something. Like one of the people was an engineer, so there's some metal work that looks like an engineering kind of thing that someone had created for him. Or Jeff, there's this cool crystal thing that he used to have on his countertop at home, or like things that mark each grave, but there's not that there's anything wrong with that. We just don't do headstones. And Jeff's was a whole totally special thing because the family was old.
Yeah. Did he live on site?
He did not, but he always wanted to. So finally, the last 3 weeks of his life, he got to.
Yeah.
I mean, he had years and years before. Old ashram he had for many years. He built the thing, but then he didn't. But he wanted to, but his partner didn't really want to. And it was always a struggle for him. But right at the end there.
One of the ways that I like to start the podcast is, like I said yesterday, hearing a little bit about the person who died. So today we're talking about your dad. I'd love to hear a little bit about your father.
Yeah. My dad's name is Jeff, and he grew up out east in New Jersey and then spent time in Vermont and in his like early to mid 20s. And from the way that he talked about his life, he seemed to always be kind of digging for big questions and curious of how to connect to life and mystery and the unknown more deeply and more openly. And
a real seeker.
Yeah, a total seeker and dreamer. He loved spending time with his dreams and felt like that was a place where he could connect deeply to what was happening in his life and for himself and the people around him. So he was this total artist, mystic, fixer guy. And his big questions in his 20s brought him to a spiritual study group that was a group of people in that same age that were similarly rigorously asking questions and looking with wide eyes at what the world had to offer them in terms of what this life is and how they could live it well. And that steady group just continued to kind of pulse with energy, and more people joined, and then it became a communal living group. And then that grew into a larger group, and then that grew into an ashram. So there was a spiritual teacher and a community, a sangha, that were dedicated to living and working and asking big questions together. So the way that I saw and understood my dad was as someone who really was fed by being in the thick of life with others, curiously creating kind of a structure, a home, an ashram in their case, that would allow them to live well together and ask those questions. And yeah.
And you're the youngest of four siblings. And I know that you spent a lot of time at the ashram, and you're at the extended ashram now. It moved from the original location, but that's where we're having this conversation from, and also where your dad spent the last few weeks of his life and is buried there at the cemetery. So as a child growing up, you weren't living at the ashram, but you have close connections with all of the youth that became part of this community. I just feel like you had a very unique upbringing that was so held by a whole group of people that went beyond your immediate family, which was just a very beautiful way of kind of becoming into the world and into community and the heart work that I know that you do today. If you could tell me a little bit about those last few weeks of your dad's life.
Yeah. So this was in March of 2021, spring of COVID times. And my dad had been diagnosed with leukemia 9 months earlier, but had been feeling ill and off in his body for years at that point. So it was in the spring, and his leukemia just started kind of rapidly progressing. And so he was in the hospital in a more critical condition. And so my brother and I from Bozeman, and then my sister from Santa Barbara, my brother from Prescott, all kind of came together through all of the rigmarole of COVID times, and were seeing and supporting him for a few days in the hospital. And then it became clear that he was dying, and we got the time frame of like about 3 weeks. And so at that point, I guess like the children were figuring out what to do. And I knew that I could call Tina and that she would know how to figure out that question with me. And so I called Tina, and she came over to my dad's house with two giant thermoses of chai and her puppy. And within 10 minutes, it was so clear, like, of course, my dad can come to the ashram. Of course, that's the right place for him to be. And of course, there are many people that will help support him and us through that transition. And so then took some, you know, some like time and check in, and the way that Tina was talking about yesterday, the moment of COVID, to make sure that everybody felt safe with the way that people were coming to the ashram, and we were coming to the ashram. But it felt like within a day, or maybe it was 2 days, that my dad was moved from the hospital to the ashram, and we set him up in a room that kind of a large bedroom that has a half wall. And so there was his hospital kind of hospice bed was in the back, larger space of the bedroom. And then out front, there was a day bed and a coffee table. And so that's where we kind of started settling in for the next 3 weeks. And the house that we were in is a large guest house that has about 10 bedrooms, a large living room, a large dining room, a large kitchen. And so in terms of space, it was like absolutely perfect because we could all stay in our own bedrooms and have our own space. But then my dad was just downstairs and we could easily connect and care for him.
Wow. That just really sounds like an ideal situation.
Yeah.
I love that Tina shows up with chai and a puppy. Like, what better comfort?
Yes. And then the remarkable Tina, because she is like just a human that has no limits and bounds and can do it all. She was making chai for us every single morning while my dad was dying. She was organizing so that his friends would spend the night in his bedroom, and connecting so that meals were made for us and other people were coming in to make us all of our meals during those 3 weeks. And then she was kind of guiding us into knowing how we can care for my dad and how we can bathe his body and change his diapers and all of the kind of like very physical parts of death. And then she was making sure conversations were happening harmoniously with kind of the always complicated family dynamics and, you know, different personalities that are inevitably a part of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she used the backhoe to dig the grave. So truly.
Wow. Yeah. Truly an instrumental person in all of this. Also just knowing what needs to be done and how to get it done. You know, I'm guessing that you all had plenty of time to really be with your dad. And as long as he was able to communicate, knowing that you were all there with him must have been such a gift for him and for you that you got to spend that time.
Totally.
When he passed, were you present for the death?
Yeah. So about 3 days, maybe it was 2 or 3 days before he died, and then kind of his body state changed and it was clear that he was in a different phase of his dying process. And so at that point, then we were just taking shifts, me and my three siblings and my stepbrother and Tina as well. So all of us together were each spending a few hours up with him in the night. So he passed away at 4 or 5 a.m. and my brother Suka was with him at that point. And so it was just my dad and Suka. And then the rest of us were woken up and we came down and kind of began to care for his body.
Wow. His oldest son. That seems appropriate.
Yeah. There's a really beautiful death prayer that's shared in this community. And the idea is that it's read by someone who the person who is dying really like trusts and can lean into. And the idea is that as the person dies, then we can remind them through this prayer that they're free. They're free to go, and we are safe. We are held, and we release them, you know, into the world, into love. And so, yeah, my brother read that prayer once he passed away.
Mm. So tell me about the after-death care and, you know, who participated, how that felt.
Yeah, so Tina absolutely guided us through the after-death care. And we washed his body and, you know, emptied his bowels and just made sure that he was in a clean state. And then there's large ice packs that we have for this after-death care. And so we placed those all around his body and on his organs. And we dressed him in nice clothes. I remember that we had brought like a nice shirt for him from home earlier, but somehow we had not thought of pants or didn't bring pants. And so we went to the ashram gift shop and bought some pants for him and put them on. And we just made the space feel like a temple and a sanctuary. And so my dad loved roses. And so we had dozens and dozens of roses set up all over the space and tens of candles. And for the next 3 days, then someone would sit just outside of the bedroom through the visiting hours, or which may have been like 6 or 8 hours during the day. I can't quite remember. And then people just were able to walk through the space or be in the space however they wished to be. And we continued to you know, change the ice packs and make sure that the body was kept well preserved during those 3 days.
Mm-hmm. How did all that hands-on care feel to you as the youngest daughter?
Yeah, I loved it. I felt so grounded and like drawn into myself and to life through that physical care. For contrast, which I didn't know then, but my brother died about 6 months after my dad, and his death was quite sudden, and I didn't have that hands-on interaction with his body. Mm-hmm. And it was much more dissonant for me to like realize and feel that he had died. Whereas with my dad, like I have this embodied physical memory and sense of what it was like to hold his cold hands and to touch his cold forehead and like lips. And for me, that was really, really grounding. And I know, like, for my sister, for example, it was like much more squirmy and like there was a range. Yeah, a very memorable moment. There's been like a running joke in just reality that like us warbs have kind of a weak stomach and strong gag reflex. Me and Suka working together to change my dad's diaper, and it was very poopy, and we were just gagging and feeling like so, you know, bad because we just wanted to be respectful and like it's no problem, like we can do it, but like we just couldn't help ourselves, and that was sad and funny at the same time, and just part of it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. So many diapers. I mean, he raised four kids. So there you go.
He had a really hard time changing our diapers too, I know. So it seemed only right.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So for 3 days, you all and then the people in the community holding vigil. So then when it came time to bury him, Tina indicated there was a procession, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that unfolded.
Yeah, so when it was time to bury him, then we kind of wrapped, like swaddled his body in some blankets that were important to him or important to others. There was a few blankets, and we put his body on a burial board, and I can't remember how many people it took to carry his body, but kind of processed and led the group carrying his body down to the cemetery, which was about a quarter mile away from the house that we were in. And during that time, then someone was carrying incense and we were all chanting a chant for a teacher in our lineage, Yogi Ramsarat Kumar, which for us is just a connection to kind of like the oneness, the cycles of life, love, surrender. So that was happening, and we took his body, and my brothers lowered his body down, and then many people, myself included, kind of helped cover his body. And while that was happening, then other people were throwing roses into his grave, and we just spent a nice amount of time in that process and shared some stories, just kind of the things that you would expect mm-hmm. the end of life celebratory
mm-hmm.
moments. And then we had ginger beer and Reubens and chips.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Was he particularly fond of Reubens?
Yeah.
And being back at the ashram now, you get to go out and visit his grave space.
Yeah, it's so special. My brother Chand, his ashes are out here too. And I love that it can be a routine part of my week just to pass by where they are, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's intentional or just that I'm on my walk or run and they're there. Yeah, the anniversary of my dad's death was March 12th. And it was great. It was so easy to just gather there and be there with close friends.
Nice. Well, Naomi, thank you so much for sharing this. I know Jeff would be so pleased.
Oh, he would be absolutely delighted. Yeah.
Very cool. Is there anything else that you would like to add that maybe I forgot to ask about?
I think something that is alive for me now is, and was then as well, was realizing how much dedicated attention from people for years, how much that energy, that attention, those relationships were instrumental to me having the experience that I did with my dad. The bureaucratic work that went into making a cemetery here in the ashram, or making this nonprofit church organization so that all of this kind of living and being together is possible, all of that sort of administrative stuff, to just the relationships that allow intimacy and closeness and care at all of these different stages of life. So as I'm here now, I just feel like reverent for the decades and beyond decades of work that others before me have done, so that I and hopefully many others can have the experience of being cared for in these critical life moments.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a, like you've said, for decades, this has been cultivated, and there's many layers of making this whole experience possible in so many caring relationships. I feel like you're very fortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just makes me wonder, like, of course, not everyone is like a part of or wants to be a part of an ashram or a spiritual community that has this sort of physical structure. But it seems to me that whether we live in, a suburb or a city or wherever, that there's ways that throughout our lives we can intentionally cultivate relationships with the knowledge that we will need our collective care in these moments, and make sure that our emotional and physical and spiritual bodies and physical spaces can be ready for that.
Yeah, beautiful. A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for communities and families who choose to care for their own loved ones at death. Check out our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to share your home funeral or natural burial experience on the podcast, please email me at podcast@homefuneralalliance.org. We'd love to hear from you. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home is written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our beautiful cover art is by Linda Curray. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home. I want to be you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens the other way around, I know you'll gently lay me in the ground and take the next breath. Take me.